Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Today's conversation, very timely as it will focus on considerations when it comes to navigating investment portfolios through macro as well as geopolitical uncertainty, including the role of alternatives in that context. Joining us for the conversation today right here at our 1285 podcast studio in New York, I'm glad to welcome Jordan Brooks, principal and co-head of the Macro Strategies Group at AQR Capital Management. Jordan, very nice to have you here at the table. Thank you very much for spending some time today with our listeners and looking forward to our conversation. Great to have you.
Dan, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So there's a lot to cover, a lot going on in the world, top of mind for our listeners, our clients here at UBS. I'm curious on the onset to get your thoughts on the markets, the type of resilience we've seen in markets in the wake of the recent instability in the Middle East, which we're, of course, keeping a close eye on.
Certainly, resiliency is the word that comes to mind. You know, markets have largely shrugged off a lot of the geopolitical risk, and you think of, the potential closure of the Strait of Hormuz and then the challenges that that would have posed. Markets have largely looked through that. They've certainly been encouraged by the, let's call it somewhat tepid response of Iran. as a quant, I'm not in the business of making point forecasts about geopolitical risk. But I will say that, there's certainly a scenario in which things, might die down a little bit. But if you think about the full spectrum of what's influencing markets, you have geopolitical considerations. You have the July 9th trade deadline looming. Mm-hmm. You still have a Federal Reserve that's facing considerable uncertainty on both sides of their mandate. And we're also coming off a period, and I'll really go back to middle of last summer, a period in which heightened macroeconomic uncertainty has fueled financial market volatility many times over in the past year. Not sure we're going to see a full resolution of that uncertainty anytime soon. So, to go back to where we started, sure, the resiliency of markets is surprising. As an investor, I wouldn't let that lull me into a place of complacency.
So to your point, it sounds like a lot of these considerations will remain with us for some time. If we focus in on some domestic points of interest, you mentioned how Fed Chairman Powell, he has indicated over the past few months that the central bank does face challenges if the Trump administration's trade policy spikes inflation, slows growth. I believe he came out within the past couple of days and indicated that we may see evidence of that over the next couple of months as we make our way through the summer. What's your assessment, Jordan, of current economic conditions here in the U.S., and how do you expect that trade policy might evolve from here?
So in terms of what's transpired already, always easier to deal with the past than the future, though far from a triviality. In terms of what's evolved thus far, you're certainly seeing that economic conditions are slowing in the U.S., growth negative in the first quarter, poised to be or tracking a positive number in the second quarter, but certainly the first half of 25, likely to be slower than the second half of 24. That's kind of the growth side of things. On the inflation side, core inflation is holding steady in that 2.5 to 3% range. Core measures, super core measures. I think what the Federal Reserve is particularly thinking about is, well, which way is that going? Right. They would have liked to have seen deceleration. We haven't seen deceleration. Are we likely to see a continued pickup with tariffs? And you have the July 9th uncertainty and the uncertainty about future tariff arrangements and kind of the overall political risk that trade policy has fostered. But on a tangible level, you have weighted average tariff rates right now as they stand that are probably somewhere in the low double digits, up from the low single digits prior to this administration. What's the impact that's going to have on inflation? You have many on the FOMC that are wait and see. You have some, and they might be motivated by a variety of considerations, but you certainly have some that are looking at arguing that at most tariffs are a price level impact and not an inflation impact, therefore don't call for a policy response. But I think the overall tenor is wait and see. I think the one thing, Dan, that the public, and when I say public, I mean markets, always seem to miscalibrate is the sensitivity or the weight that central banks have on their inflation objective. Right? Unless inflation shows signs of ebbing, you're not going to see aggressive monetary policy easing.
There's no shortage of geopolitical and macroeconomic risk at play. We've alluded to what we've seen recently in the Middle East. Of course, a lot else happening in the world to be mindful of. What's top of mind at AQR, and what do you believe investors should be focused on at the moment?
The thing I'd be most focused on is, even prior to, say, April, the economic backdrop is one of heightened economic uncertainty. The path of disinflation has been much more tepid than forecasters have forecasted. That goes back to, 2022. Economic growth has remained resilient at times, now showing signs of ebbing. So you're in a world of heightened uncertainty. Now you layer on top of that uncertainty caused by trade policy, you layer on top of that uncertainty relating to geopolitical risk, and you have uncertainty on top of uncertainty. Like I said, that's manifested itself. That's not just an economist, on the one hand, on the other hand type of joke. It's manifested itself in financial market volatility several times throughout the past year. I would anticipate more of that. So if I'm an investor, I'm thinking about the resiliency of my portfolio. I'm thinking about the things that I have that are going to balance some of the equity risk in my portfolio, be that asset class diversification, be that liquid alternative allocations. But I'm really saying to myself, all right, how am I going to navigate a drawdown? And I'll just make one more observation, because some fun data we looked at recently. August severe drawdown, SVB in 2023 severe drawdown, April severe drawdown, quick rallies. And I think that's created the expectation that, okay, well, there might be a severe drawdown at some point, but it's not going to be a prolonged painful period. If you look at the period, in the 2 years preceding the global financial crisis, I think you had 3 15% drawdowns that rapidly recovered. Mm-hmm. This time is not any different. Right.
So there's a lot of historical precedent.
A lot of historical precedent, and you could see, markets are very rich. We're back to all-time highs. You have a variety of negative catalysts. You have, potential economic growth slowing. I mean, if you see economic growth slow, global growth slow, inflation stay stubbornly high, at some point markets are going to say, well, I don't want to be at a PE in the mid-30s. And that could be painful, and that's not going to necessarily resolve in a month.
So when it comes to positioning considerations, that's a good segue. I'm sure a lot of advisors have clients asking them during these uncertain times, what should I do in my portfolio? The kind of role that alternatives can play in one's portfolio, what are some considerations there? How should investors be thinking about that as an option if it's appropriate?
Yeah, especially to investors who are not that used to alternatives, it could be a scary landscape, right? You got a variety of funky names, equity market neutral, managed futures, multi-strategy portfolios. And it's not always the easiest landscape to navigate. But I think, what investors really should be focused on or thinking about kind of two things. The first is, what does my portfolio look like and what can I stomach? What are my objectives? Those objectives might be improving tail performance of the portfolio, in which case something like a trend following strategy, which tends to have the propensity to do well in large market drawdowns, might be appropriate. Or investors might be more focused just on, give me something that is a pretty good return engine, could generate absolute returns, and going to be lowly correlated to the market as a whole. And then I think you're in the realm of something like a multi-strategy portfolio, which will give you the highest Sharpe ratio, low correlation, you get a little bit of everything in there. Now that could be a lot to underwrite. And if it's a lot to underwrite, it could be a lot to hold. It's not always easy. It's if you have a too Sharpe ratio strategy, you'll lose money 5 to 10% of years. You could probably stomach that even if it moves independently of the market. If you have a 0.5 Sharpe ratio strategy, that's going to lose money like a third of years. And if it's doing so totally independent of the market, it's not at all unlikely that you're going to have a 3-year period where the market's raging and your alternative's underperforming. And the important thing then is you have conviction in what you're doing. You have a portfolio that you could actually ride out. So that's another consideration investors have to have. Can I underwrite the process so I'm comfortable with what I'm doing? We've seen a lot of investors embrace managed futures and trend following strategies in part because they get it. We've seen investors embrace equity market neutral strategies, even though maybe a multi-strategy portfolio has a greater absolute return because they're comfortable investing in stocks and they get long short stock selection as an outgrowth of long only stock selection. So I think there's a variety of considerations, but I think the old economist in me, you know, I learned on day one of freshman econ, objectives, alternatives, constraints. That's how you write down an economic problem, and I think that's how you solve this one.
So to be a bit more pointed in terms of identifying in this arena the risks as well as the opportunities set, how are you thinking about that? What should participants be mindful of when it comes especially to the risks associated with these types of investments?
I think they need to know they're not a panacea, right? And you need to be able to, you know, ride them out for periods of time. I think the number one thing for investors to consider is, am I truly getting an alternative? Lots of things call themselves alternatives, right? Private equity, private credit could be hailed as alternative investments. And this is not a criticism nor an endorsement, but they do have equity beta, right? The type of alternatives I'm talking about in the liquid alternative space, I think investors should be focusing on things that have minimal equity beta. You have enough equity beta typically in your portfolio. So that's kind of the main risk that I think investors should be wary of. Am I truly getting an alternative here? And then I think about, you know, setting an allocation and, you know, that old infomercial setting and forgetting.
Yes.
If you time diversification, here's another cliche. If you time diversification, you'll always be a day late and a dollar short. Now we actually have warning signs this time. So, it's, you know, maybe this is, I'll take my words back and say, well, this time, maybe you do want to time it. Maybe you do want to say, hey, things look a little scary out there. Equities are back to all-time highs. Maybe lock in some of those gains and think about, you know, a liquid alternative allocation.
Well, Jordan, very actionable when you think about these positioning considerations, and really enjoyed hearing your macroeconomic and geopolitical perspective as well. Before we close out, any final thoughts, takeaways, anything you would want to reinforce to our listeners today?
Again, I would start with that, you know, what we talked about at the beginning. I wouldn't be lulled into a sense of complacency, right? We're back to all-time highs. Now's the time to think about your portfolio. Think about kind of setting that strategic allocation. I have investors ask me so many times, I'm really interested in equity market neutral. I'm really interested in trend following. I'm really interested in the multi-strategy. Is it a good time?
Right.
And I say, listen, any ability I have to time these strategies, I'm already doing in the investment process, right? So I wouldn't think about timing. I would think more from a perspective of how do I set up a resilient allocation on a go-forward basis. Can I do this in something where I could underwrite it, where I could understand the investment process, and that's going to help me ride it through good times and bad? And I think that's, you know, that's really, it's not rocket science at the end of the day, right? And I think sometimes we overcomplicate things a little bit. Get a nice, hearty allocation to alternatives. It's going to diversify a lot of the traditional asset risk that you have in your portfolio, equity risk in particular. And that's going to help you. We saw it in 2022. You saw it in certain segments in April. You'll see it again if there's a large market drawdown. And, you know, hard times, they're never behind us. They're always just lurking around the corner.
Jordan, really appreciate your expertise, your guidance, and your insights. So thank you again for joining us up here in the studio, spending some time with our advisors, our clients listening in as well, and the first of what I hope will be additional conversations to come, as there is plenty in this arena to talk about. So thank you, Jordan, for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Dan. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.